Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. And as you regular listeners know, we've begun a series here on HealthLink On Air, Difficult Healthcare Decisions. My co-host for the series is Dr. Gregory Eastwood, professor in SUNY Upstate's Bioethics and Humanities Center. Joins me at the microphone this morning. Good morning, Dr. Eastwood.
Good morning, Tricia.
Welcome back. I look forward to these conversations because they are just fascinating. We also have with us this morning Bonnie Braddock, certified genetic counselor, and that should give our listeners a clue about this morning's topic. Good morning, Bonnie.
Good morning.
We're so glad to have you back as well. Genetics, if you will, Dr. Eastwood, set the stage for us this morning. What's our conversation?
Well, we're going to talk about personalized medicine and genetics, but February is a very important month.
Right, and this is actually the impetus for this conversation,
right,
isn't it? And that is?
February 12th happens to be the birthday of Charles Darwin, who we credit with starting the whole idea of evolution.
Yes.
He was born on February 12th, 1809. When he was exactly 50 years old, he published his seminal work on the Origin of Species. Now, another important person was born on February 12th, 1809, too. That's Abraham Lincoln, and most Americans know that. So two very great people were born on that date. But the reason why Charles Darwin and evolution is linked to this is that the explanation for evolution is really genetic. Darwin did not understand genetics. He did not know the term genetics. All that came about 40 or 50 years after Darwin's time. But nevertheless, the explanation for evolution is basically genetic and genetic change.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what Charles Darwin's philosophies were, the concept he developed, I mean, what evolution is, because it really does have an effect. We look, and not only does it have an effect on how we see science, it has an effect on how things are taught in schools in different parts of the country. So let's talk about what evolution is.
Yeah. Well, evolution is a scientific theory. Now, sometimes people get stuck on the term theory thinking it's not proven. It's a different kind of theory. I mean, we have the theory of gravity. I don't think anyone objects to or disputes the theory of gravity. So from a science point of view, evolution is pretty secure. How it is brought about and exact mechanisms sometimes are refined over time. The controversy, of course, is that religious belief comes into this, and there is a creationist theory and other variants of that.
Well, basically, though, what I want to go to is the heart of evolution. It comes from the word evolve.
That's right.
And basically what it means is survival of the fittest, or at least that's how we describe it. So if you will, explain to us how survival of the fittest applies.
Well, because of the change that comes about in organisms because of genetic variation from time to time. In fact, it's actually quite frequent, but most of the genetic changes aren't viable. But those that do sometimes prepare a animal or a plant or some other organism to deal better with their environment. And because of that, those animals and plants then propagate similar genetic codes in their offspring.
So their genes kind of switch differently, don't they?
That's right. And they create different proteins that are able to do different and more beneficial things to the animal or the plant. And then they survive in that environment. Of course, one of the problems is that when the environment changes, then maybe what was good for one environment is not good for another.
And going back to all of that, too, we can sort of look at today's world. And a good example is when we've been talking about the various infections that we're having trouble fighting now. And we've talked before on the show about MRSA, and that is a good example of how this particular organism has adapted to its environment so that it can't be killed. And
that's
that really
right.
is the kind of thing evolution is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a very good example of evolution. And, of course, that is an evolution that only takes a few months or a few years. And, of course, it's very common, that kind of genetic change is very common in bacteria and the bugs that we're trying to fight.
So, Mr. Darwin didn't really talk about genetics, but how does genetics apply to evolution?
Well, genetics explains evolution, as we said, that the genetic change that occurs just random or by chance, or sometimes in response to things like radiation and other kinds of a genetic trauma, then we'll create a different genetic makeup of the plant or animal. And then, as I said earlier, most of the time that difference is not beneficial to the organism, and it just dies out. It either is lethal to the organism or just is not propagated. But sometimes it is beneficial, and then you have a new series of organisms that are better adapted. And this is, although it seems far-fetched when you don't look at the details of the science, but I believe it, this is what has accounted for the evolution of various species and, of course, changes within species.
And so, if I understand correctly, and Bonnie, this is kind of where you come into all of this, if those changes take place in our genetic makeup, and let's switch to human beings now, because that's really what today's topic is, if those there's an evolution of those changes, and you said, Dr. Eastwood, not all of them are good. And that might explain why we now have problems that we can find in our genes that develop what certain kinds of disease and so forth. That's what you deal with, isn't it, Bonnie?
It is. What our arena is in genetic counseling and medical genetics is to try to correlate if we can find certain genes that may explain certain diseases.
Well, this also has to do with the Human Genome Project, which is a huge thing, and I know people have heard of it. And maybe, Dr. Eastwood, you could describe to us what the Human Genome Project was.
Well, we've known about genes for a long time. Gregor Mendel was a monk who lived in the mid-1800s, and he, in his one of his hobbies, was to grow peas, and he noticed that there are various changes in the natural changes in the peas that sprang from the older peas, and that led to the notion of genes and genetic variation. And then in the 30s and 40s, 1930s and 1940s, DNA was discovered, and of course most of us are aware of the work of Watson and Crick in 1953, where they not only defined DNA, but they defined the structure of DNA, the so-called double helix.
Now we're going back to high school biology.
That's right.
Study that.
So the double helix is made up of what are called bases. You know, we know the letters A, G, C, T, and so on. In fact, Gattaca, that movie of in the mid-90s, it was all about that. But it's a marvelous, simple, but extremely complicated system that these four bases are linked together in sequences that will then determine various genes along the DNA strip.
And they're all in our cells and make us who we are.
That's exactly it.
So the Human Genome Project, in effect, identified what those are.
Human Genome Project was begun in the early 1990s. It was a combination of a U.S. federal through the NIH, National Institute of Health, and also private enterprise. And it took about 15 years. It was culminated in 1993. And it identified about 23,000 genes. Actually, the prediction was there was going to be a lot more than that. 23,000
really?
Is a lot.
It is.
But in any event, those 23,000 genes are what determine us. Now, I should hasten to add that there is a huge overlap among ethnic groups. I mean, ethnic groups vary from one to another just by 1 or 2% in that whole genetic code.
Wow.
And we, as humans, differ from lower animals not very much.
Really?
We have a huge overlap in our genetic code with them, too.
Now, so let's make sure we understand. So those 23,000 genes, we all have those exact same 23,000 genes.
Not quite the exact same, but we have about that number.
Okay.
Most of them.
But what makes us different is the fact that the genes look different.
Well, you see, that's where the difference comes. I may have a gene that predisposes me or several genes to colon cancer, and you may not have those genes.
Okay.
So that would be a difference between your genetic code and mine. Now, if you were to add up all your genes and my genes, the vast majority of them would be very similar.
They would. Okay. So that also, Bonnie, is what brings you into the conversation and the fact that you work with people to help determine what their genetic code is. And why do you do that?
Well, somebody may come to attention because there is a family history of a certain disease or disorder, like colon cancer. So the question comes up, can we identify a gene or a change, what we call a mutation in a gene, that can be correlated to that disease so that an individual may make different medical choices to try to reduce their risk or prevent that disease from occurring.
Which is the definition, isn't it, of personalized medicine, right? Creating our medical approach to life based on our genetic code. And when you do all of this, do people come to you because they're curious? Do they come to you because they've already been diagnosed? What predisposes them to come to you to begin with?
Well, there's several different reasons. Somebody may have had a recent diagnosis and they want to know if they carry a gene that might put them at higher risk for a subsequent disease where they need to make a certain medical decisions in context with their medical treatment currently or in the future.
And, you know, I'm going to stop you right there because we need to take a quick break, but you've set the stage perfectly, because what personalized medicine does, it tells us we have choices even though we have a certain genetic code. And that's what raises these ethical dilemmas, doesn't it, Dr. Eastwood, that we need to talk about?
You bet.
Very good. Well, listeners, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go to the news. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what some of those ethical questions are and how people need to look at them to make decisions for themselves. We'll be back after the news. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.